You're listening to From the Midlands, the stories of people making a difference across the region. Our presenter is Gail Downey.
Food insecurity is a global problem. Not having enough to eat, not being able to afford to buy it. The quality of the food and the uncertainty around availability. In this episode of From the Midlands, we'll be hearing from horticultural expert Oliver Baker, based in Warwickshire, who's been carrying out research work into how we tackle the problem. Hello, Oliver.
Hi.
So, obviously, food insecurity, massive global problem. How are you helping here?
So, over the last 2 years, we've been doing something called the Ripe House Project, which has been a collaboration between five different companies: University of Warwick, CHAP, which is Crop Health and Protection, Ripe, which is the company I work for at the moment, Mudwalls, and Evoponics. So together we've been looking at how can we help cucumber growers specifically, but we've also done trials in here on tomatoes, peppers, chilies, and herbs. And we've been looking at, within a traditional environment, how could we improve upon that? The main element we've been looking at is a new greenhouse building material called ETFE. ETFE is a plastic-like material, but not derived from fossil fuels. And its key components really are that it lets through more light. So you're talking about 10% more visible light and about 40% more UV light, meaning that the plants we grow in here are growing like they have outdoors for the last hundreds of millions of years.
But in very, very big greenhouses like the one that we're standing in at the moment.
Yes, and even bigger. So the greenhouse we've got here is about 1,200 metres squared. And for commercial production, you'd realistically be talking about 30 to 100,000 square metres.
And 1,200 metres squared, just explain how big that is.
So it's somewhere between the size of a basketball court and a football pitch. So in here, we can have around 2,400 plants at a time, which is enough to produce about 10 tonnes of cucumber a year. So a lot of produce.
And your trials have been taking part here in these very large greenhouses. And what have the trials consisted of?
We've been growing a variety of cucumber called Quattro, which is a small baby cucumber, kind of like a snacking variety. Within this, we looked at several different things. So we looked at how biostimulants can help the growing environment. So biostimulants are naturally derived compounds from seaweeds and algae and other compounds that we find naturally that you add to a plant to kind of level it up. So one of these was a product called Bud Honey, which essentially is a carbohydrate cocktail that means that the plant no longer has to produce these carbohydrates. So instead, it can focus its energy from the sun on producing other compounds, meaning it gets a boost. And we found that in this environment, when you have low light levels around January, February, March, at the end of the year, October, November, December, you can get an increase from 4 or 5% all the way up to about 20%, meaning that you can kick off your year with a boost and finish with an extra boost. So little things like that can mean that the profit margin can move more favourably in the way of the grower. Within horticulture, you're talking a 1% to 2% profit margin. So little things at the end of season can really make a big difference.
So the biostimulants, what's the chemical makeup of those? Because people are always worried about chemicals in their food.
Well, so they are technically chemicals, the same way that sugar is a chemical. And that's the way you should be looking at it. So although we kind of talk of biostimulants kind of as a big name, and if you're not familiar with them, can potentially sound scary. But what you're talking about really is putting in something that's already come from a plant into another plant. So it's not like you're putting in some abstract non-compound. You could drink this. I wouldn't be enjoyable, but it would be food safe.
So it's recycling itself and then feeding itself.
Yes, it's using what other plants produce to help a different plant. The same way that you might use an insect to pollinate instead of machinery. So it's using nature to help nature.
And why has no one thought of this before?
Biostimulants have been around for a while, but the links have been tenuous on their ability to help. As we're moving forward and getting better and better understanding, the positivities and the benefits of them are becoming more obvious. We found that in an environment like this, where you've got so much natural light, they aren't as profound as when you have them in a glass house which had limited light. So when you've got any sort of limiting factor, another product that can kind of boost that is really helpful. In here, we've got optimal light, optimal water, optimal nutrition, which means there's only so much you can improve upon. So midsummer, the biostimulants weren't as impactful. But in the winter and colder months, then yes, they can be quite useful.
And do you have to add any other, I'm going to say, normal fertiliser as well?
Yeah, so we have an irrigation system that's all hydroponic. And we have a mixing tank out back that has two different tanks with a variety of different chemicals in them, the kind of standard things that everything needs to live, so your phosphorus, your nitrogen, potassium, and they all combine and they get put onto the crop the same way as you would in a field or in a traditional greenhouse.
And as part of the trials, you've talked about cucumbers, but you've also looked at strawberries, you've looked at tomatoes, you've looked at peppers as well.
So the environment we're growing in, which is focuses around this ETFE growing environment. ETFE stands for ethylene tetrafluoroethylene, which is a bit confusing, but essentially it's an inert plastic that lets through more light, and it's not new to the industry.
And this is what your greenhouse is made of?
This is what our greenhouse is made of. Instead of glass, we use this material, and it's been used in Japan for the last 40 years because it's earthquake proof. You don't want glass in an environment that's going to shake, because it will shatter and fall into a crop, therefore ruining a crop. So, but it hasn't really been used in Europe that much. It has to some degree, but the advantage of trialling multiple crops is working out, well, how do they function differently in this environment? We have been growing indoors in glass for 150 years now, so we means there are going to be changes when you change the growing environment, and what changes are those in here? But what are the other knock-on effects? Some will be good, probably. Some may be bad. I mean, insects, which are our main pest, or one of our main pests, and diseases, were always outside. So if this environment is closer to their norm, then they may perform better. But that goes twofold. So the predatory animals that are destroying our crop and the things we bring in to kill the pests may both perform better. And by looking at tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, different herbs and other plants in here, we could understand what those changes are and which varieties might be better. We had some strawberries in here this year, and we found that one variety didn't function very well in here, and the other really well. So it will help inform growers if they make a transition to this new material that you should avoid maybe this variety and focus on this one which will perform better. Because a grower isn't going to go, yeah, I'll build it, but I'm going to not grow anything productively in here.
That defeats the object, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. You also do some tests around flavour and freshness, don't you?
Yeah, so a large part of what we do in here is looking at the UV light element. And the UV light has a big impact on flavour. And as part of that, we sent some of our cucumbers off to Camden BRI. They used to be part of the government's department for doing all the food analysis. It's now an independent company. So they're kind of experts on this and can get down to levels of detail that I can't do in a lab. So we sent those off and they did a food enjoyability test, which is all about the crunch, the taste, the juice, the enjoyment of eating it and what it looks like when you purchase it. And we sent off two of ours. So we had a baby cucumber and a kind of medium-sized cucumber. We found that compared to the competition, ours had the best of those. We scored around a 9 and the best of the competitors was around a 7.
And the competitors were growing them in normal glass houses?
They were growing them in normal glass houses in the UK and from Holland and Spain. So it was quite a nice summary of the competition. There are some complications there about we don't know how long it took for them to get from Spain to here, and that may have affected it. But 9 to 7, and the lowest was around 5, is quite a significant difference. The main thing that really was good about that is our medium-sized cucumber was just a baby cucumber grown bigger, which essentially meant that all we did was pump more water into it, which means even when you diluted ours down, it's still at a higher rating than the baby cucumbers grown here and abroad. And that, I think, does show that this environment is doing something different.
People are always concerned about the environment in terms of, you know, air miles and so on with food. Have any of your trials involved those kind of factors?
We haven't directly looked into air miles specifically. We have looked more around the kind of heating component. So the biggest factor in horticulture is actually the heating. Transport makes up around 0.5 to 10% of the CO2 emissions or CO2 equivalent. So the big issue is actually the environment you grow in. So if you grow a tomato in the UK, it's going to be about 3.8 kilograms of CO2 per kilo of tomatoes.
And that's because the greenhouse.
And that's because of the heating.
Yeah.
The ways of looking around that traditionally have been, well, what source does the heating come from maybe? If you're going to have a cheap source of heating nearby, then that covers your costs. An alternative, which we can do with our new glazing material, ETFE, is a double glaze panel. Because the material weighs 0.1% the weight of glass, you can put a double glaze panel into an existing roof and you could have a heat reduction of 30, 40 or 50%. And that has cost elements to it and environmental elements to it. And you could significantly improve the cost saved and the environmental impact within the same growing environment you had before. And that's quite key for us.
So given that in terms of CO2 emissions, it's actually taking up more to grow in the UK because we have to heat the greenhouses more, should we all be buying from Spain or from Italy where it's a lot warmer?
It raises quite a complex debate, which food security has always been. It partly depends on what the goal of food security is. If the goal of food security is to be self-sufficient, then you should buy from the UK. If the goal of food security is to provide food to everyone globally, then having hubs that are more efficient and more environmentally friendly makes sense. So hotter countries like Spain, Morocco and Italy, and up-and-coming Egypt and some of the Middle Eastern countries makes a lot of sense. Likewise, we tend to grow wines in certain regions and other foods like that. So it makes a lot of sense if we can work as a global group to do that on a global level. Obviously, there's complications around politics there that make it harder. And if the effects of climate change mean that some of these pathways close because we focus on self-security, not global security, then we import a lot of food. About 48% of our produce is imported. So if tomorrow all of a sudden Netherlands, Spain said no, then yeah, we would have a significant problem. But in my mind, we should be working together with a bigger picture of us all surviving through this and having security, rather than going, actually, we're going to plan for the worst. Not that we shouldn't, but our first goal should be to work together.
And I guess, as you say, it's a political problem as well, because I know we're always encouraged to buy British, but that may have a knock-on effect in terms of the environment.
Yeah, so across a lot of produce, and particularly in livestock, if you look at beef, for example, it doesn't really matter where you buy it from. 99.5% of the CO2 is produced in situ, so in the location where it's grown. So actually, it doesn't necessarily matter whether you ship it by boat anywhere around the world. And travel by boat is probably the best way of transporting anything. The CO2 per mile is a fraction of anything else. Air freight is an obvious no-no. I think we can all agree that flying anything doesn't make sense, particularly if it's a vegetable. But again, we don't actually do a lot of that. So yeah, it does come back to quite a complex picture. Are you looking for the environment? Are you looking for locally? Are you looking for CO2? I mean, UK-grown stuff tends to be more expensive because we have higher salaries here, a higher quality of life than a lot of other places. So it's not an affordable option for everyone. At the moment, we're looking at about 17 to 19% food insecurity for households in the UK, which means about 20% of the UK can't afford to buy nutritious food. They don't have access to it, which means that they would struggle. So if we said tomorrow you can only buy British food, that would probably have an even larger percentage of the population who couldn't afford to eat nutritiously. So it is a complicated debate.
And when you talk about nutrition in terms of freshness, you surprised me when we were talking earlier about the fact that actually tinned food can be as nutritious in terms of freshness now compared with obviously 50, 100 years ago.
Yeah, so one thing that has become more and more important, particularly for supermarkets and transport, is shelf life. Well, one of the main ways we deal with this is by picking fruit before it reaches its optimum ripeness. So ideally, we'd all have a tomato plant in our back garden and would pick them the day they hit their optimum. But if you're shipping food around the world or even around the UK, and it's got to sit in a supermarket shelf for maybe a week, you want to make sure that it's not going bad before you sell it and can eat it. And to do that, we pick food early. The one place you don't see that is with tin food. Because if you're going to tin food, you can pick it at its ripest, ship it 10 kilometres down the road and can it. And by doing that, you're getting the food to its best from a nutritional point of view, meaning that it's going to be got the highest sugar levels, it'll have its higher micronutrients and macronutrients. So tinned tomatoes are probably some of the freshest and most nutritious you'll find. But there's a disparity within our mindset that tinned food isn't as good. I mean, you see it in other things, fruits. A lot of the fruits we buy, you pick them in the supermarket and they're hard. And you've got to put them in the sun somewhere to ripen up. So quite obviously, those aren't at their ripest. So tinned fruit, like peaches and nectarines, can quite often be the more nutritious version. It's not always that simple, but sometimes they add stuff to them, like additional sugars to make them sweet or last longer. But in general, the fruit itself at picking is at its optimum for quite a lot of tinned food.
We started the interview talking about food insecurity and the global issues. How important is it, the work that you do here?
So by opening up different mechanisms of growing, it opens up your options. So at the moment, if your option is glasshouse, polytunnel or field, those are three options. If we can offer an alternative version of a glasshouse, a natural light growing environment, then it offers places where the light levels are already lower, an environment that is going to be more responsive to and more active in the growing processes. ETFE is maybe not going to have a huge benefit in countries that are already hot or countries that have a consistent light level throughout the year, because you're probably going to get enough of that from glass. It'll still help and you'd still get better levels, but definitely within the UK and other colder climates, a double glazed panel would mean that you'd have warmer temperatures in winter and slightly colder temperatures in summer, meaning that you don't have the extremes. Plants are very sensitive. We kind of often don't value them the same way as animals, but plants respond a lot to their environment. And stresses, like you see in everyone, mean you're not functioning as well. And lower light levels mean you're more stressed. So we're fostering an environment of health in here, and it would mean that crops in the UK would have more flavour and more nutrition without changing anything you do within the greenhouse itself. So it would be a hands-off approach to better quality food.
Oliver Baker from Ripe House, thank you very much.
You've been listening to From the Midlands, a Whirlwind production. If you've enjoyed listening and would like to sponsor this series of podcasts, details are available on our website at fromthemidlands.co.uk.